I got it this time.
Lock on. That's great!
Oh, no.
Tonight, reporting from the scene of a scandalous rendezvous.
What's this about?
I'm Adrian, SNN investigative reporter. We would like an interview. Can you spare the time?
Welcome to another episode of Macro Speaker Podcast. It's April 19, 2015. We've got the bulk of the gang together for the first time, I think, this year in the same room. And there's been so much going on. Heck, we've got one heck of a show. One heck of a show lined up today. We've got meeting the legendary Macross artist, Yoshiyuki Takani. We've got Wonderfest and the Arcadia, the latest stuff with the VF-Zero A and S. We've got
a new Get the hell out of the way! We got a VF-2SS coming! Shut up! I don't see how Leonardo Flores can talk about the VF2SS on a previous podcast a week ago and say he doesn't want no saps. He don't want no junk on his stuff.
No junk.
He don't want no junk. And 1 week later, a toys company announces they're releasing a 160 VF2SS. What the hell, man?
Leonardo, what have you done?
Well, I guess that was their market research. They probably decided, hey, I guess the people don't want the junk. That's okay. We don't need to make the junk.
Macro Speaker Podcast. All your marketing research for Macros all in one place.
Yeah. And then they go and name a hobby store after Leonardo.
But anyways, this is Macro Speaker Podcast. On my left today, I have
Adrian, also known as Save Robotech, also known as Save, or as some people point out, Indiana Macross.
Or today, Genki Adrian.
Yes. Very excited.
On my right, I have
Renato.
The polar opposite of the cast.
And this is Gwyn Campbell, otherwise known as Torture on the Boards. And hey, everyone, it's been quite a while since we've been together. Before we get into all the news, we do have an email address. I always forget to point this out. speakerpod@gmail.com. If you have any suggestions about the podcast, guys, or feedback, feel free to drop us a line. We're also around on the Macross World and Facebook on any one of multiple Macross groups. Too many to count, in fact, so drop us a line.
So we're on the Macross World?
We're on the Macross World.
Okay.
The Macross World. But, look, without further ado, let's get into some news.
Delta.
Did you say Delta?
Delta.
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 Oh my god, Annika, I think they're talking about Delta.
Delta.
Delta. There better be some Destroids in this.
What do we know about Delta? Not much. This is something I'm going to be saying every podcast for a while. But there was
Why?
Because Delta. But one piece of news did come to light recently, and that is the first round of Idol auditions are over, with the second round approaching late this month. And we have...
What month is this?
As I said at the beginning, it's April.
Oh, did you say it?
I'm learning. This is... We've narrowed the field from 8,000 applicants. 8,000, including many who did not meet the qualifications, anecdotally speaking, to 15. 15. Now, the question is, Renato, are we going to now have to narrow that 15 down to one, or are we talking about an idol group here? Maybe 15 idols is what we need for a new Macross.
Well, they already did that. It was called AKB0047.
The...
Oh, 48, 48. There was one more. Why did I say 47? Because probably... Because I keep mixing up AKB48 with AK47s for some reason.
Did you kill off one of the idol members?
Maybe.
So we're down to 15 people, so there is slow and steady progress. And a couple of... one small comment came from Kawamori himself recently, which I'm just going to throw out there.
Okay.
And he was talking about the 33rd anniversary, which is what we're at, for the original Macross. And he said, you know, he is taking time to do the best job possible with Delta, and that he wants to do that because it's the 33rd anniversary. In other words...
3-3.
3-3. In other words...
Triangle, triangle.
Double triangler. Could that be a hint? Who knows? But we'll certainly keep you updated here at Macross Speaker Podcast. Renato, put your triangler down. In other news... Sorry. Everything's ending, apparently. You could almost say things are winding down as of late.
Oh, shut up.
Macross Card Fighter, that atrocious free-to-play game with all the gorgeous new artwork of characters in costumes they never wore in any of the shows, almost Evangelion-esque, has announced they're going to be stopping service. They're going to be closing down at the end of May, May 31st. So if you felt the pain of playing what is really not much of a game just to try to get a picture of Emilia or Emilia actually in a nightgown, save those pictures now. Wow. Because they're not going to be available after May 31st.
Is that one of the ones where you have to pay for extra content?
You can pay for the gacha, for the random draws, which is where you get the really good cards from. If you play for free, you'll never get any of the really good cards.
Do you know anyone who's paid a lot of money and has a
Not
ton
personally, of- and I've talked to a couple of Macross fans, even like Hisame, who I know plays, she hasn't spent any money on it, but if you look at the rankings and the top scoring people, they've got to be paying a ton of money.
We've got to track those guys down.
And ask them why.
Yeah.
So Macross Card Fighter is on the way out. Also, as we've reported in the past, there is a Macross Cafe over in Ikebukuro at the Kyarukuro Cafe. These kind of collaboration cafes are normally about six-month affairs. And this has lasted quite a bit longer. It's been going for about 9 or 10 months now, but the end is in sight. The Nyan Nyan Cafe will be closing down, shutting its doors on May 31st. So if you're in Japan at all before that date, drop by, check the place out. They still have plenty of events in the meantime. There's going to be a Ranka birthday celebration with special smartphone stands you can buy for about $20 and things like that. Custom parfaits and all these kind of rankerish things. So yes, that's on the way out. So check it out if you're in the neighborhood.
I still haven't been there. We should go there and record mini podcast.
We should. It'd be very noisy because Captain Wilder tends to break in and disturb the cafe.
Yeah, it makes you sing.
Makes you sing.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
And then
you're down with that.
All right. So stay tuned for that. Also, the latest in the Variable Fighter books has come out. Variable Fighter Archive Episodes 1, which no one really knew what it was before it came out. It came out, and it is pretty much a prequel and somewhat of a sequel to Macross Plus, which is not what I expected.
But is it short stories, or what is it?
It's split into two stories, and the actual thickness of the book is about the same as a regular Master Files book. So okay. It's got some
But none of you guys content. Have it?
I've got it. I forgot to bring it in. We're too busy preparing for a certain other story, Renato.
Well, I wonder what that is. What can be more important?
I have no idea.
The VF-19.
But yeah, it's got like pictures of young Newman, like in his 40s, and a bunch of new characters. Yep. It starts off, in Macross Plus where they refer to, the 19 was crashed before Isamu comes on board?
Yeah, yeah.
It's got that pilot and what happens there. And then it jumps forward into the future. Afterwards, and you see what happened to Yang and a couple of other characters. So it's not what I was expecting. Of course, as with all these Variable Fighter books, it's kind of an official doujin. So take anything in there with a grain of salt. But as my stance with these Variable Fighter books has always been, unless they explicitly contradict something in the animation or in pre-existing material, they exist to fill in the blanks. So they might as well be canon for all intents and purposes. SDF3. So the only other news, sorry to get back to something negative, but yeah, Macross the First. Oh my goodness, what is going on? Mickey Mortal, what are you doing?
We should call it Macross the Thirst. Yes. The thirst for new content is killing me, really.
I kind of like
no,
that.
No, not really.
It kind of...
You like it?
Yeah, that's a good ring to it.
Well, the latest chapter has been delayed twice now. It was originally due at the beginning of April, then it was delayed until mid-April. Now it's been delayed to the beginning of May, and there's been no real announcement of this. The only way of knowing is by checking the release calendar in the Japanese version of Comic Walker. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. However, the latest Tankobon, the collected print edition, is coming out on the 26th of May. Again, that was delayed by about a month, but it is coming, and it will probably... it will probably be the last printed new material we get for quite a while, given how long it's taking the digital updates to occur. So run out and get that, and I'm sure that our roving reporter and...
I don't think you need to run to it.
Our roving reporter will probably be giving you a giving everyone a heads up on what is in that volume once it comes up. Richard, we're looking forward to that.
So.
Wonder Festival. Let's start with Wonder Festival.
Let's start with Wonder Festival. Way to throw me off. Okay, hang on, skimming down a bunch of notes here. So Wonder Festival, February 8th happened. Yep. And, well, we didn't get there particularly early this year.
But, no.
We weren't snowed in either this year, which was a nice change.
Oh, yeah.
But we got there and made an immediate beeline for the Arcadia booth.
Yep.
So what did we find?
Well, we found the final paint scheme, or the finally approved color, signed off by Tengen.
Of what?
The Zero-D.
The Zero-D.
He signed off on it. He gave them samples of the original textures. So, and he says, based on the color that they ended up with and the budget they had for the painting, it's 80% accurate.
It's 20% inaccurate?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's just the color.
That's the only thing people are going to pick up on. It's 20% inaccurate.
But is but what's the actual reason then?
Why? What, the 20%?
Yeah.
It's because on the arms and the leg, it fades from that blue to white.
Yeah.
And it's a really feathered, gradual change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and that's difficult to reproduce on
the... Well, unless you want to layer it.
Right,
and
right.
That's just going to cost more and more money. So it's just a really, it's a little bit of a splattery fade.
It's like
I
a
guess.
Wavy kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah. So it's the best they could do on the budget. But the color blue is pretty much what it's supposed to be. Even though I think it's supposed to have like a little bit of air drag color onto it as well. But that's
like
the right.
I hear the internet exploding right now. We're paying 35,000 yen for that.
Well, maybe they should give them 20% off because it's 20% inaccurate.
God.
So this was also where they first announced the VF0A and S.
Yes.
And or AS.
ASS1. So, and they had the grayscale mock-ups of both of them.
Right.
The S was in the Batroid mode, and the A was in fighter mode.
Yeah. And we spoke to some representatives from Arcadia who were at the booth, and they assured us that... these were not just re-releases of the old molds. They had taken all the work and time and money they'd invested into the Zero-D and were using that and pumping it back into the A and the S to make what are pretty much completely new molds.
Yeah. Now, let's see. As far as the Valkyries, they had the 1J with the... Armor, right. On display, and the stand, which we talked about in the previous podcast. The other thing they had was the CAD diagram for the Milane base.
Right, they did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Will that ever actually come out? It's amazing what a speaker podcast April Fool's joke
can
will do. Yeah. But no, that
well,
is...
Well, everyone must be listening to this podcast because they made a VF2SS based on Leonardo's one throwaway comment, and then they made a Milane base based on your joke.
Movers and shakers is what we are.
Was there anything else at the booth?
No, nothing major. I mean, honestly, it was... seeing the A and the S was really good. It was really... I mean, the S looked terrific. I love the chunky proportions in the legs.
You guys hear that? Prepare for transformation in T-minus.
I don't know if the mic will actually pick that up. There's an election going down, which means we have election vans trawling the streets right now here on this gorgeous Sunday in Tokyo. But it's...
What's gorgeous about it?
That's the point. Yeah, the S looked amazing, but compared to the last one or two Wonderfests, it was relatively slim pickings overall from Macross things.
Well, there was... Somebody needs to turn off their Skype. Well, we did hear some, not rumors, but insider people talking about why things were a little bit slim pickings for a while. and that the S and the A were almost indefinitely on hold and not being approved. They wanted to do the S. Arcadia wanted to do the S and the A, and they weren't getting a okay from Big West to do it. So people in the industry knew that people had worked on them. They knew Arcadia wanted to do them, but it was on hold. So everyone was a bit surprised to actually see them on display and that they were actually approved.
Right.
And because you had asked if the fold booster. No, not the fold booster. The one question was, and you asked, will the 1A include a ghost?
Right.
So.
Yeah, and as it said on the posters there, yeah, it's not going to, but it looks like they're making them so that the old ghosts can be used with these new molds because they're not really sure whether they'll be doing the ghost in the future. I mean, these two did kind of come out of left field.
Yeah, because I think the poster artwork for the announcement had the 3D graphic or the actual 3D image from the show with the ghost on its back.
Mm.
But it actually doesn't come with a ghost.
It actually says on the sign, it does not come with ghosts.
Yeah. And as we walked around the exhibit floor,
mm-hmm.
we stopped by T-Rex's booth.
Right.
And we talked to one of the three members of T-Rex, because T-Rex is not one person. And he was even telling us a little bit of a backstory of how things were kind of put on hold.
Hmm.
And even that he was surprised that it was actually approved. That they came out with it,
yeah. He said he was surprised when he saw them on the floor. Like,
yeah.
I don't think he heard much in advance.
Yeah.
Then, as we proceeded to walk around the Wonderfest floor, it was slim pickings Macross-wise, but it was a good show overall. Mm. But there was this one particular maker that always do, shall I say, SDF3 kits.
Well, he's a friend of mine. I've actually met him at my first Wonderfest. He speaks English, he's a Japanese kit maker, and he usually does battleships, space battleships. I mean, he's done stuff from Galforce, Gatchaman, the 90s Gatchaman.
Oh, he had some very niche designs. Yeah. He had the spaceship from Infinite Space, which was a Platinum Games game for the 3DS.
Mm. He's done VFX ships. He does a lot of the Macross 7, like, not the main carriers, but the other, like, kind of...
The escort ships.
Escort ships, and he does the Britai ship.
Yeah. Very good quality, very good... all built up and painted really nicely.
Yeah.
But
we were going to his booth, because what we do is we kind of just skim the rows, keep going down and down.
Because Wonderfest is a huge event.
Huge event. And we just kind of scan tables until we see Macross stuff. And we saw something two tables before my friend's table. But my friend was talking to somebody who was in front of his booth. And they were having like this pretty long conversation. So we're just kind of hanging off to the side, looking at some other stuff, waiting for their conversation to finish. And when I looked over at my friend, he looked at me and kind of just gave me this weird face, like kind of this weird expression. I was like, okay. And then I looked at the guy that he's talking to, and you can only see like the side profile of him.
Right.
And you see this long ponytail, and he's a bit tall guy.
Right, and you see like a bandana.
Bandana. And, and I nudged you, and I'm like, hey, is that Miyatake?
And from the side profile, I was like, no, written that, And, of course, we circle around, and, of course, it is.
Yeah.
Miyatake's a good spot.
Yeah, because we kind of came around the back, and I looked at my friend, and I, like, kind of mouthed, is that Miyatake? And he just shook his head, like, yes.
So everyone was, like, really focusing on him, because since the man is very difficult to get in touch with and doesn't have a mobile phone, everyone wants to talk to him while he's there, because he disappears mysteriously afterwards, and you don't see him for another 6 months or a year or so. So he was there, and they were talking about a bunch of stuff, not necessarily Macross related. A lot of the discussion centered around Yamato stuff. People were asking questions about the original design of the Yamato, and there are a few questions I'd heard brought up previously. For example, of how if you look at the animation of the original Yamato with the ship coming towards the screen, and then you look at the shot of the ship going away from the screen, back into the screen, I should say. Those two parts of the ship never connect correctly if you try to make one ship out. And that's because different artists worked on the front half of the ship and the back half of the ship. And, you know, Miyatake is always, you know, happy to say that. Oh, no, my half was good. It was the other guy messed up.
But didn't he comment the actual original design by Matsumoto?
Yeah, this is the I'm trying to remember. This is why I did the Indiana Jones and I told my stuff. I put it in the notebook so I wouldn't have to remember. He's my notebook.
Didn't they say, like, his original version of the...
my notebook.
Did he say that his original version of Yamato looked like a potato?
Oh, yeah, he did. He did, yeah. He did mention that. Yeah, there was a bunch of comments about Yamato. Yeah.
So we were just listening to a conversation already going on.
Right.
And kind of just waiting for it to stop so that we can turn around and basically...
and say, hey, there's this event called Macross World Convention. And if you're ever free and want to come overseas, we'd be happy to bring you over. And of course, the standard response is contact my agent. Which?
Oh, you actually asked him that?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess you know who he told us to contact? Studio Nue.
You want to explain that? You want to explain why that's such a pain in the neck?
Well, they're too busy fighting certain other... Yeah.
There's three guys... I don't know. I haven't spoken to them in years. But apparently there's only three people in Studio Nue. I'm assuming they're including Miyatake there. Right? I don't remember the name. Kitagawa-san, something like that. He's the main guy in charge. But he basically threw us out, you know, when we went there a few years back.
We didn't even get in.
No. And it's like... it's kind of annoying, because when you consider what happened 30 years prior to that, Mikimoto and Kawamori, who were just school kids, did exactly the same thing that we did. Knocked on their door, and Miyatake opened the door and said, hey, come in, sure, yeah, that's the Yamato over there, take a look around. But we got the look up and down, and they're like, yeah, phone next time. Got the door slammed in front of us.
Yep.
And the door said Studio Nue, and you were not in.
Yep, that's pretty much what happened.
That's what happened.
So,
it was a pretty cool trip, though. Let me just say one more thing. Rumblebee, yeah, that was pretty cool.
I found those photos, by the way.
Oh, did you? Yeah. I have to look for them. I don't think I...
So
tell people what this trip is briefly, so that we can tell the story another time. But what are you talking about?
Adrian and I and Alex, who is another big Microsoft fan, we went to is it Shimoigusa?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that.
Wait. No. It's not Shimoigusa. It's the one that's along there. Hang on, I'll get it. Kamishakuji.
Oh, okay.
It's Kamishakuji. And I just invited you so we can take a look at the sign that they had just put up, right? Because in Nerima Ward and Suginami Ward are competing for... who is the anime ward of Tokyo? Tokyo has 23 wards, as in Megazone 23, right? Megazone 2-3. And Suginami and Nerima both say that they are the home of Japanese animation. And Suginami has their animation museum as part of the kind of like town hall thing. And Nerima has lots of studios there. And so... they're starting to put up lots of statues recently.
They did like a Maytel and a Tetsuon Atom and
Joe, Ashtano Joe is there.
There's a mobile phone app you can take pictures with them in certain.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm going to go there during Golden Week.
Well, I asked Adrian to come with me last week, and so he said, "Yeah, okay." And then I said, "All right, so what time?" And then you never responded as usual. So never mind. But anyway, so this time he responded. I mean, this time like 5 years ago. And so we said, okay, let's go and check out this sign that says Macross, Super Dimension Fortress Macross was made here. And that's really all it says. There's maybe like one paragraph about how it's important in Japanese society.
What else does it need to say?
Because idol culture or whatever. So it's got a picture of... I think it's one of the pictures that they made for the Laserdisc release years back. And it's nice. And then it's funny because Alex went behind it and say, hey, if you look... if you look at the back, it's got a very nice representation of Macross 2 and where it stands in the canonicity of it. And you turn around, look at the back, and it's just an empty thing. We pointed and laughed at you.
Well, so, the joke's on him this episode.
We should have turned around to him and say, well, wait 6 years, because then, you know, stuff's really going to fly. Anyway, I said, you know what? I have a map. I have the address of Studio Nui. Not a map, but because I have the address, and we can work out
because this
where
is what people carry around when they're randomly out for the day.
Yeah, no, it's because I had sent them an email recently before that.
And you wonder why they then shut the door on your face.
Yeah. I did phone, actually, now that I recall.
Yeah, but for something else, not to
It was
go
for something else.
No.
I didn't say that. Well, anyway, whatever. Yeah. But it was a really, really hot summer day, I remember. We were boiling, we were sweating like hell. And if you know anything about Japan, it's not like a street name and a house door number. No. It's like little sections, right? So you gotta go to Sanchome, nani nani ku, nani nani whatever, and then you gotta zoom into these blocks. And so it was a lot of trial and error, but we made it there eventually, and then, you know, got our doors slammed in our faces.
Hmm. All right, so let's bring this back then.
All right, so if we decide to try again to invite Miyatake to Macross World Con, we have to again go through Studio Nui.
Right, so you know we were just making him aware of the event. So you know, said that, and then you know thanked him for his great designs, and said hi.
I think I remember sending them an email. About that very thing, about asking Miyatake to come to Macross World Con last year.
Hmm.
They never got back to him.
Well, nope. He knows about the existence now. So.
Yeah.
We're out there spreading the word, so you know, we've told Miyatake about it, and we've shown a picture of Carl Dunn dressed as Fokka to Mikimoto. So we're out there. Now, I don't know whether that would actually motivate him to want to come, we're out there spreading the word regardless.
But we can just leave it at that, could we? We kind of just said, well, thank you. I hope that you can come. More conversation was done between some other people, and we wanted to ask him a question, and he was about to leave, but luckily my friend behind the booth wanted to take a picture with him.
Right. Which is rare, because he doesn't really like pictures.
Yeah. But I guess they're really good friends, because from the previous year, Miyatake did the signboard for him.
Right.
And he was displaying it behind his model kit that he was selling. So my friend came around, and they took this picture together, and then my friend said, can we take a picture where I'm hugging you?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and Miyatake is just rolling his eyes like, oh, God. But he did it, and then after that, you jumped him, and you said, yes, in the master files.
Richard, you owe me for this.
So, yeah, you want to
yeah,
go
well,
ahead
okay,
with
yeah.
that.
It's, oh. God, it's all coming back to me. So I you know... mentioned, you know, are you aware of these master files? Have you seen them? And yeah, he's aware of them. And I said, he's not that knowledgeable on the details. I said, well, in one of the master files, you know, there is this picture of a ship, which it's labeled as the SDF-3. And apparently it says the Britai's ship was reclassified and ended up being the SDF-3. And Miyatake was like, huh. Fair enough.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's logical. And that was it. So, SDF-3 confirmed. To put that in, to give that a small caveat, though, there was a...
small caveat.
There was a fan who's also a doujin artist who was hanging around the booth as well, and he is one of the few artists left who does mechanical, original Destroid and Valkyrie mechanical art for doujin, for fan comics. And I've spoken to him a couple of times. He does these small pamphlets, not anything really thick, but you've probably seen them, Renato. You get like a small pamphlet like on the battle pod, on the Regalt. Yeah, and you just, it's always art. He's done some interesting variants as well. And, you know, he's always said that the reason he does this is to try to keep the spirit of those 80s and early 90s doujin alive, where people were more focused on the mecha and less on moe porn. So he was there, and he was talking, but he's actually met... He's actually met Dr. Chiba.
Oh, okay.
And Dr. Chiba is a fan.
Masanori Chiba.
Yeah, but I've seen him credited as Dr. Chiba as well. Maybe that was a gag. because Dr. Chivery Macross 7 is based off him, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's one of the original fans who worked on the Sky Angels doujin back in the 80s, which is a really famous doujin with all this mechanical stuff, which a lot of those stuff, including Chiba, went on to do the Master File books. And I was talking to this guy because he's, you know, knows of him. In fact, Miyatake mentioned him by name as well. And they're like, yeah, but, you know, take all this with a grain of salt because, you know, this is all, you know, doujin, right? And I was like, I get it. I just wanted to bring it up to Miyatake to get his take on it. So, you know, Miyatake said it makes sense. But on the other hand, other people in the conversation were like, yes, but it is a fan-created work.
Published by SoftBank Creative. Was there anything else at Wonderfest? That was pretty much it.
That was pretty much it, yeah.
I think there was just the Ichiban Kuji stuff that recently just came out 2 weeks ago.
All right, there were a few kits of, like, Minmay.
Yeah.
Which have been at other Wonderfests.
Kits of Minmay? Oh, I see.
There are a bunch of kits of stuff non-Macross related, like there was... well, not just kits, but there was... The August was there. There was the new... Future Toys Garland.
Yeah, they're working on a garland.
Who's there?
That looks really weird.
Yeah, it's kind of...
It's not...
Different.
It's stylized, right? Yeah. We definitely not line up.
We had a very in-depth discussion with Egan Liu of the Anime News Network about this, where we pulled out the line art over drinks of all three versions of the garland to see which one it resembled most.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really stylized, so...
Well, it's being marketed as the one from number one.
But it looks more like the one from number two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It looks nothing like the one from number three, which is a good thing.
Well, it looks a bit like the original one, doesn't it? Like, the one that they call the original one in number three. No?
I don't remember. Like, the front has these elongated prongs on the front.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. It looks like the one from the PlayStation 3 game.
Oh, God.
You're going to have to pull out that game.
Yeah. What if they release it and it's blue?
Yeah.
The blue garland.
But you know what? People actually like the design of that.
But no one liked the game.
No. That's the caveat. Anyway. Do you want me to talk about the August? Before you move on to...
Sure.
Well, yeah, we went to the Mega House booth, and it had a really nice display where it was in all the modes.
All four.
Yeah. All four modes. And I took a bunch of pictures. They should be on the front page of Macross Worlds.
Yeah, they...
So check that out. If you want to look at the Wonderfest coverage, there is... Go back there if we missed anything.
Both of the four modes.
But, yeah, because it's the first time I actually got to see the size and the color, and it looked really good. Right. But I'm more impressed by the photos I've seen of the packaging.
Yeah. The packaging is almost identical to the Takatoku old box. And I mean, like, not just the way that... the way that it's designed or the color or anything like that. I mean, the... well, not this, but...
What's
I mean,
this?
Yeah. This is the Orgroid 2. Have you ever opened this, by the way?
Yes, I have.
Okay. This one here is... What scale is this? 160 scale. So it's quite small. The one that they were trying to emulate is the 140 scale, the biggest size that they made. The die-cast... Four type changer. This one here only. I think you can only make the tank with this one.
Anyway,
they've reproduced all of the poses that were in the illustrations of the original packaging. Everything, like the position of the text, the font of the text, everything is identical to what it was. The texture on the box is the same as well. And it's got a front kind of cover that you can open up that is held together by magnets. So that's where your budget went. People are going, "Whoa, why is it so expensive?" Box, man, box. Boxes are important.
Are you happy with your purchase?
Overall, I'm happy with the purchase. It's not, you know, problem free, but then nothing is these days. And it's also like people tend to get, myself included, tend to get like a more critical eye the more they spend on something. And I think that's just natural.
You spend a lot of money on something and it's 20% accurate, I mean.
Yeah, well, this one is 100% accurate. No, there are no problems with the sculpt as far as I can see. Then again, you know, what is it accurate to? Because I was watching the show last night and, you know, some scenes don't hold up. Really? I'm glad it doesn't look like the cartoons sometimes, most times, let's say. Anyway, it looks really good. It feels really good in the hands. There's so much die-cast. Pretty much all of it, apart from the arms, is die-cast, I'd go out and say. But then, like, the internal mechanics are so complicated that it's a real pain in the neck to transform. I've only done it once, so I'm sure I'll get used to it, and it'll be alright eventually. But right now I'm very scared about something called gold plastic syndrome or bronze plastic syndrome or something. It's some similar sounding term that Transformer fans made up. Like their Black Zarek toy from the 80s. There are no pristine samples of that toy in existence because they all crumble. Because there's something about bronze plastic that just crumbles. It erodes. So all of the internal joints are either bronze plastic or die-cast.
That's until I find one.
What happens when you find one?
Because I'll find one that's pristine.
So. Oh, yeah, but then you don't touch it and leave it in the box like this one. So it's, you know, sure, okay, great. You can just say, I've had it for 30 years and it hasn't broken. No, things don't break in boxes.
Come on.
Anyway, that's kind of what I'm afraid of. Because I'll say one thing, we're talking about the garlands, right? The protogarland that I have from Yamato, it just crumbled apart. It totally pulverized itself.
That's something
because
else.
All the joints are that bronze plastic. Right. Also, you know, March 11th, giant earthquake didn't help matters. But it was breaking apart to begin with, even before that. Yeah. So, Orgus, if you can afford it, definitely go for it. And when I say if you can afford it, don't wait till the price drops because it's not gonna, probably. It's one of those things that's a limited run. Having said that, it has gotten a lot of good reviews on Amazon in Japanese, and some English-speaking sites have taken up.
All right.
Oh, wait. One more thing that I want to say about the Orgus. The first run, now whatever this means, because I thought they only had one run. The first run comes with a limited edition booklet of just Miyatake talking, right? It's an interview with him, and it's quite candid. There's a lot of things that I didn't actually know. I haven't read the whole thing yet. Before I bought the toy, actually, a nice guy by the name of Oli Barder gave me some scans. So I was reading through that before, about a week ago. And apparently, like, we knew that 1983 was a very busy year for Miyazaki.
Right.
But I had no idea that his father had passed away.
Oh, damn.
And his mother... Oh, man, see, I can't remember right now. His mother had to take over his father's business, but then she collapsed from overwork, so she was in hospital, and so he had to take care of the business and visit her in hospital and take care of Orgus and Dumbine and Macross the movie. So it was a really, really crappy time, I think. And, you know, to have had so much output in that short space of time, and so much high-quality work as well.
Right.
Because he did pretty much everything in Orgus, and I would say 80% of everything in Macross, the movie. And Dumbine, well, whatever. but, like, you know, that's one of the reasons why he didn't do the Zentradi male power armor in the Macross movie. He just told Izubuchi to do it.
Oh, okay.
Because it was just too much for him to cope with. So there is that. And it goes together well with your meeting him, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This past Tuesday on the... Was it March 14th? Wait, April. No. This past April. This past Tuesday, which was April 14th, was the 35th Miyazawa Moke exhibition, which is held in the Tosho Center, which happens to be the same place the Speaker Podcast is recorded at.
Funny, though.
And I actually... did not know what was going on, and I was on my way to Starbucks to do some stuff, and I took the stairs, and I saw what was going on, and I kind of just didn't want to look at anything that day, and I was about to just head out. But something told me to go back upstairs, get my camera, and just go. So I went back up here, came in, got my camera, got my business cards, because you have to have, you know, some kind of credentials to get in, because it's not a public event. Went downstairs, and I figured, well, Arcadia is going to be here, but there probably won't be anything new. Yeah, well, and then there's also X Plus. X Plus might have a painted version of the monster. So I went straight to X Plus, which they're usually the table right next to Arcadia. They still had the same monster, which was at Wonderfest, we didn't mention.
Oh, we didn't mention that. Yeah, we didn't mention
that. Was also at Wonderfest, and it was the exact same one. It was just the resin mold.
It's the X-Pretend?
Yeah. What? Not X-Pretend. It's X Plus.
X Plus, my bad.
So they had it there with the Dumbine next to it, the painted Dumbine.
Really huge Dumbine.
They still haven't really said a price is set, but it's going to be expensive, but it's going to be a giant soft B. Soft vinyl PVC monster. And then of course next to them was Arcadia, and then Arcadia had the same 1S on display, and they had a painted master of the 1A in fighter mode. Unfortunately, no photos were allowed of that,
which is why no one's heard this yet.
Yeah, so it was there painted and it looked really nice, and it actually had the decals on it.
Keep saying 1A, but I think you mean 0A, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Like, when I was coming in from the bathroom before, you were talking about the Arcadia booth in Wonderfest. You kept saying 1A as well. You said, Gwyn as well. You said the 1A won't come with the ghosts or something. And I'm like, what the hell are they talking about?
Yeah, we do that from time to time, especially me, because...
Yeah, well, yeah. In Macross, numbers are important.
Well, I know, but there's only one Valkyrie that's important. We just don't have one yet, so...
I forget
the other ones, so... So yes, the 0A was there in fighter mode, and it was the kind of a paint master, or the first version of the paint job that's going to need to get approved by Big West. So there probably was no actual approval yet, or Tengen probably hasn't seen it. But it was there. It looked really nice. They also had the head separated from it, so you could see the head sculpt, which looked really cool. And both of those are slated to be released this year.
Which seems like a lot of output for 1 year. Do you think we're realistically going to get the A and the S this year?
Well, based off the fact that it was approved, they probably want to get them out. And that the 0D seems to have been done fairly well.
And remember, Yamato also released like four things at the same time in their dying days.
They weren't all three...
The 4G.
Yeah, the 4G, but they didn't release three things in a row that were all, like, really, really highly priced. They released one thing that was really high.
No, the 4G came out right about the same time as the 17D, and then the separate 17D parts.
But how much was the 17D?
It was a lot. It was about the same as the 4G. The 4G was, like, 25,000. The 17D... If you bought it separately, it was like 28, something like that. And then if you bought it with the fast packs, it was over 30. So it was actually more expensive than. Yeah. Well, and then there's something else. Oh, the 19P. Yeah, I remember. That's why I never actually got the VF4G, because I said, oh, the 19P is what I've wanted all my life.
What concerns me here, Renato, is that you're talking about
a business that
Yamato that released four things in quick succession,
and then
went bankrupt, and business, and now we're seeing the same pattern this year.
Pretty much it. I've gone to Miyazawa Moke so many times, but I used to go to take all the sexy figures and take photos of everything for Tomopop and some other websites I would give content for. So I pretty much decided at that point I was going to leave. And I was heading towards the door, and I ran into a friend of mine who works at Hobby Stock. And he had asked me to go by his booth. a little bit later. So I was, okay, I'll walk around a little bit. So I started walking around, checking out other booths. Went to Banpresto. There's no new Macross stuff there because the Ichiban Kuji just came out. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just start looking for anything Arpeggio, because, you know, Arpeggio is kind of what I've been watching, aside from Yoamushi Pedal. And I went around, and then I saw that my friend went back to his booth, and I went over to the Hobby Stock booth. And across from the Hobby Stock booth was the Evolution Toy booth. And I walked right by it. I turned around, and I saw these foam matted images, like, you know, these images that are glued onto these foam board backings, and my jaw just dropped instantly, and I was like, what the heck is, no way, and it's a VF2SS. And I looked at the representative like, are you serious? Is this real? Is this coming? And at that point, I didn't even know it was Evolution Toys.
At that point, you were.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Good thing it's in the same building.
Yeah, I know.
Change very easily.
True. I was very excited, and I... just sounds weird. Dropped to my knees, pulled my... pulled my iPhone out. Like 5-6 pictures, immediately threw it up on the one of the Macross groups on Facebook so I can get out there. And I also noticed that everyone was just kind of passing by looking at me like, why is he so excited? I could feel everyone looking at me like, what is it he's looking at? And I assure you, it wasn't the big jumbo sized Mazinger
next to it, right?
No, I did not see that. But unfortunately, they didn't actually have the prototype there. It was just the grayscale photos
right, of
all three modes. And a card, like a title card that said 160 scale, valuable mode.
Yeah.
And then there was a card in front of it that actually had the price tag of Niman Gosen.
So...
which is at this point about $200,
around
$200 US. And that was pretty much it. And that it was,
I think that's kind of interesting though, the fact that they would have nothing decided except for the price.
I'll get into a little bit more detail on that,
okay,
based on other conversations I had later that evening. So the news went out, and I tweeted about it.
Yeah.
Within 20 minutes, and the Japanese fans, like number one Macross fan, retweeted it, and it started slowly kind of tweeting.
That means you are the number one Macross fan now.
No, number one Macross 2 fan.
Well, I guess one of one is one, right?
So I started throwing the tweets out and trying to get as much information as I could, because, yeah, there are things that this company has done in the past, and people may think, who is Evolution Toys?
So tell us, who is
Evolution Toys?
I'm surprised that so few people knew of the company, though.
Well, see, the feedback I was hearing was mostly from, like, for example, the Macross World forums, where people tend to be more into Valkyries and Valkyries exclusively.
Yeah.
So they're really interested in the wider toy or model world. Yeah. So kind of their experience with these kind of makers is in a bubble.
And Evolution Toys hasn't really done anything in the more current mecha stuff. What?
So VF2SS is a current mecha thing now?
Just shut up.
Okay. Who's living in a bubble now?
No. What I mean is, they're kind of in the shadow of a company that just closed in 2014.
Okay.
And they're kind of in the shadow of CM's Corporation, because CM's Corporation closed last... they filed for voluntary bankruptcy in... when was it? March of 2014. And they sold off all their stuff in early 2014 when they had the big sale, which I talked about.
Right.
And they got rid of everything. But back in 2009, one of the founding members of CDMs passed away. And the other member retired that same year.
This was right after they had announced a whole bunch of robot stuff that was going to come out and never did, including Orgus.
The Orgus.
Yeah.
A bunch of stuff. Because at that point, they were investing in doing all the Most Beautiful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They announced the collection figures, and that was at a similar show, but it was their own CM's show in back in 2009. And they showed all kinds of stuff that they were going to work on. And a lot of it was a lot of mecha, a lot of combining robots. And the president, he actually passed away just before that event.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then his wife ended up taking over the company. And the other founder, he either retired or he left the company. So that all happened in early 2009. But then in December of 2009, Evolution Toys was registered, and they started promoting almost identical toys.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing the same kind of action figures that CMs was doing. And they had the exact same joint system. They were the exact same scale.
Mm-hmm.
The really same shoddy packaging.
And when we say the same joint system, are we talking about the figures? I think we're talking about those large, more doll-sized...
Those larger doll-sized figures.
So the Gumbuster.
The Gumbuster Noriko.
Which is right here.
Which is right here on this audio podcast.
Which...
I remember... Now, these were on sale on clearance years after CM's shut down.
That's a liquidation.
Liquidation, right. To the point that how much did we initially end up getting some of those for?
They were at 2,000 yen on liquidation.
What were they originally?
These are like
6,000.
No,
but
these
really?
Are like a mon.
No, what? So like 100, yeah. So like 10,000 yen.
Yeah.
And how much was the last one you picked up?
Well, they started liquidating them at 2,000 yen, and then they would have time sales where you can get it for 1,000 yen up to three of them. And the Noriko one was the worst selling one.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because all the other characters were all Moe characters, newer characters.
Well, there's a Ghost in the Shell. Ghost in the Shell. Which went.
But see, they wouldn't go down on that one because that was selling fairly well.
Yeah.
But this one was the one they couldn't get rid of. They dropped them to 500 yen.
You know what?
Otherwise, I wouldn't
I'm really pissed off that I didn't get one now.
So.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have one because he was like, do you have 500
yen? No, I'm pretty sure you would still have a lot of
things to be angry about.
Even a 500 yen. Even a 500 yen.
Excuse me, I just spent 200 yen for a stupid piece of like crap. The jelly drink, the orange thing.
But the thing is, like, I just remember from seeing the liquidation, they always have a figure out of the packaging for people to play with, and and the Noriko ones are always like, well, here's half the figure, here's the leg, there's the ball from the knee.
Well, that's because
like,
people are pulling them apart, though.
No, but they're that easy to bust.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They're just not. They're not as good as a Figma or even a Bandai.
When they were announced, figure. I remember I thought it was a Figma-sized, Figma-quality figure. And then I saw the size, and I thought, oh. And then I saw the price, and I thought, oh.
Well, so I bought the Ghost in the Shell one when it released for like 8,000 yen or something. And now I've got a second one for another 2,000 yen.
So, back to Evolution Toys. They've been around since they were founded in December of 2009. So they're going on almost 6 years of being around.
Okay.
And
more than Arcadia.
Yes, a lot longer than Arcadia. Again, they actually have a couple of toy lines, and their most—I would say—their most successful toy line is the Dynamic Action series, which is mostly made up of Gonagai robots.
Yeah.
So Mazinger.
Well, they started with Jig, right?
Jig.
The whole point about the Jig. Well, the whole point about the line is that they've got the magnetic joint system, right?
Quiet.
Oh, I was going to say, that's why they started...
I did all that homework, and you're
I thought that's why the Gonagai, right? Because it's Jig. Because the Jig toy was that.
Well, that's the thing. It's still... At the same time they were operating, CMs was still trying to chug along.
Mm-hmm.
And CMs was releasing the exact same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
CMs was releasing a Jig at the same time Evolution Toys was doing a Jig. But their scales were a little bit different, but they looked identical. Their product shots look identical. Their websites look identical. So that's why it was kind of... People either thought they were just a subsidiary of CMs, but they were actually a totally separate company that basically took what they were doing when they were with CMs and doing their own thing, but based off CMs' model of everything. And I think a lot of people just assumed, oh, that's just CMs.
So is there bad blood between those two companies?
I don't really know.
At this point.
Some people said the person that left because of something went wrong, but some people say he retired. And I don't really know if it's the same person that went and started their own company, or maybe it was somebody else. But yes, you're correct. The dynamic action series is based off of the Takara's magnetic system, which in 1974 was exported to the U.S. as through the Megacorp under the, what do we call it, the Micronauts brand. Which in the U.S. or North America, we got this figure called Baron Karza,
right?
And Force Commander, which one Baron Karza kind of looked like a Darth Vader knockoff, and Force Commander looked like a Stormtrooper, and they were using the Takara's, what do we call it? It was called, where's that? Magno Power Action, and that's with the magnetic, the ball bearings on the magnets of the limbs. And that was their sale point, because that was before Transformers. But they were actually Microman stuff. So it was all the Microman, a little bit of Microman, a Japanese catalog sent over. But then the Baron Karza and the Force Commander had re-engineered heads and were different colors than the Jeek. So some people kind of remember that. And Evolution's toys, most of their best-selling toys are based off of that magnetic kind of joint system, which is a callback to the old 70s toys.
Well, I thought that was the most of their output. I didn't know what else they did.
Well, they...
And I should say that most of those were quite limited. I never saw them in shops. I mean, I saw one, maybe, in Kotobukiya, but it wasn't the one I wanted. What I wanted was the Iron Man Tetsujin.
Yeah, Shin Tetsujin, right?
I'd never seen it in a shop, physically.
Yeah, you probably have to get it from them or go to one of the toy shops in like Rajo Kaikon or something.
So, yeah, so I think that's probably another reason why they're not so well known.
Their distribution is probably not so good, but they get distributed through Hobby Japan or Post Hobby, because Post Hobby always has their stuff up for sale. And they did the same with CMs. I think they go through Hobby Japan, Post Hobby distribution. Their toy lines are Dynamic Action Series, Dynamic Action Garage Kit Series. They also have the Hero Figure Series, which is all of two figures, which are Ultraman knockoffs, kind of, which is Toho's own Zone Fighter figure, which is a total Ultraman knockoff, and Iron King. And there's only two figures in that line. And I don't know if they have any metal. Then they have the Full Puni Figure Series, which is basically the same CM's Gotokuro figure. And then they had a petite
Gutokuro
figure. And then
I remember they had that girl Minerva from Transformers.
Yeah.
That didn't sell either.
No. I always bought one of those.
Still sold better than the Noriko.
Yeah.
Really?
Even on clearance.
Half of these names for these product lines have the word dynamic.
Dynamic.
In them, which tells me Tengen was right. Because if you remember at Macross Worldcon, it's like, draw me a VF2SS. And Tengen's like, it's too dynamic. I don't need to draw it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's dynamic.
And ironically, the VF2SS is not in a line called dynamic something. Is it?
Well, no, it seems that...
Dynamic variable.
The Miyazawa Moke, it was more of an announcement, and it's their flagship new toy line. Because I thought the dynamic thing was...
It was
more because of the Go Nagai stuff. But
it probably is.
But they've gone on to do not only Go Nagai, but Shin Tetsujin.
Yeah,
they're doing the Tokusatsu robots from the kids' live action shows. I think it was like Dai something X or something.
It's Dai X,
Dai X.
Dai X is the name of the robot. Big Dai X, and the show is called X Bomba. Bomba!
X Bomba. Oh, yeah, they've done everything from Tetsujin. They did the very unsuccessful Voltron 3.
Albegas.
Albegas. So.
Which sounds like the word for green peas in Spanish.
They did Red Baron, Guy King. Well, that's Gona Guy. But they haven't done any real transforming robots. They're just either like Gata robots more or less. Not really Henkei kind of transformation or three-stage transformation stuff. And... So, yeah, I got the word out, and finally, I think Dengeki News tweeted Dengeki about Online it.
Finally got a report up.
And they weren't, they actually, it was just their regular coverage, and it's like a two-page blog report.
Right.
But even on their two-page blog, when you go to the second page, they even announce what's coming on the next page.
And they say, oh. Yeah. It's like, pay attention to the VF2SS.
Yeah. So then when you click over...
Which no one was doing in the show.
Yeah, no one was doing it. They probably noticed some white guy.
Yeah, so Dengeki Online's like, hey, pay attention
to the white guy.
This guy is really into this thing.
But the fact that you're on your knees praying to a picture in the middle of this room.
So, yeah, they brought it out, and it was more of a new line, toy line announcement, which is called Premium Action, working title. And the flagship premium action line is going to be the VF2SS. So you guys saw the photos.
Right.
What do you guys think?
What?
Oh, me first? Okay. Right. Well, it certainly is a VF2SS. No doubt about that. First of all, I'll say one thing. There's a there's a bunch of B-Club magazines here. Let's see. I can't find the one which I want.
Tell me which one you want. Tell me.
I had it right,
which
right
one
there.
Do you want?
This one here. The one that says Macross. Okay. This is a really nice picture of the VF2SS in fighter mode. This tiny, tiny thing next to it...
Which is what?
I don't know. What do you call these? The tiny...
Gachapon,
they're just Bandai VF1s. Is this Bandai?
Yeah, it's Bandai. It's collection.
The 250 scale guys.
The tiny, like 4 or 5 centimeter long.
Plastic. Yeah. So this VF2SS doesn't look like this. It looks really blocky and kind of weird. I've seen another picture of a VF2SS that looks really sleek and smooth and sexy. This Evolution toy one looks nothing like any of these. I'd be a lot more excited if it looked like the good version. So I don't know if it's because it's a 2D design, and like other toys of, for example, the VF1, we've had multiple versions and they each get better and more. We like to think that they get more accurate, but they don't actually get more accurate. They just get more appealing looking, right? Because even if you go back to the original VF1 line art, it's kind of chunky, like super robot-y, like especially the hands, the arms, stuff like that. So, you know, you can expect a certain amount of misproportion there. I guess what I'm trying to say is that it doesn't really look good proportion-wise to me.
Do you mean in fighter mode?
In every mode.
All right.
If they just made a fighter mode toy, it would probably look really good. Right.
Well, so I always said I wish Hasegawa would just do a fighter mode toy. I mean, a model kit, like,
right?
A plastic kit.
And they'd probably knock it out of the park because, you know, they'd make it look beautiful. But with this, the problem is that this is 2015 and we're paying a lot of money for high-end toys that have mostly had previous incarnations to improve, so that they know which parts to pinpoint and improve and maybe strengthen or maybe smooth out, whatever.
So what happened with Bandai's kit or the 1S? The 1J?
Well, it seems that a lot of it looks like the 1S. Oh, no, what am I talking about?
Oh, I'm just talking...
Oh, you're talking about the... Yeah, sorry. I was thinking of the Bandai kit of this thing, no, 2SS. No. Yeah, a lot of it still looks like the Bandai kit, and I guess that's okay, but I don't know. I feel like there should have been a lot more improvements. And again, I can't fault Evolution Toy because they're doing this thing from scratch.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. My major thing with it is that it exists.
How dare they?
No. That's the... There's a soundbite for an opening right there. No, that is the one and only takeaway I have from this. I've looked at the pictures and I don't think there's much to be gained from those pictures really, but does it look perfect? No. Do I care? No. Personally, I'm not a hardcore toy collector. I'm not a completionist. I tend to like two things. Anything that's a 1S or a 1S-derived Valkyrie. or anything that's original or unique enough to put a new spin on the concept of Valkyrie, which is why I like things like the VF4 because they're so radically removed, and the 29.
Right, right.
So I'll have like a couple of 1Ss and then an assortment of very different designs. Now, the 2SS is different. It's something that's never been done before, and the fact that it really exists at all, I think, is amazing. Does it look perfect? No. Am I expecting it to be perfect? No. Am I expecting them to like do a version 2 or different paint schemes? Not necessarily. So this is, unfortunately, as you said, Renato, we're in an era where people have gotten used to very high quality stuff, and we're looking at high price points. It's not really the kind of climate where you can say, look, just put your money where your mouth is because this could be it. But that is the reality of the situation.
It's also, you know, people are complaining online about the price. It's actually not that bad. 25,000 yen, when you compare it to the Orgus.
How much was the Orgus?
Yeah.
35,000.
And you add a pre-order discount. Or 36, depending on where you get it from.
Unfortunately, they're not going to have the same engineering as Bandai has. Or Arcadia. Or Sentinel. So... again, they're still coming out of the shadow of CMs.
Mm.
And CMs did the Legias and Tread, and the Tread looked really good. And the Legias was horrible.
Yeah, but I guess in this environment, you know, that's probably why it doesn't go up to 30,000.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you could probably expect that. I actually thought the price was very reasonable.
Yeah.
Even though I don't know what I'm looking for.
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe it's reasonable. Now, I'm not saying that reflects what it looks like, but if it's 160 scale...
Yeah, like for what you need to make this kind of toy, and they've already announced that it's going to be die-cast anyway, or at least
they haven't announced it. The guy I talked to told me they'll have die-cast.
You said that they... Yeah, okay. Well, that's what I meant.
So they haven't announced it, but...
He scooped it out of him. Scoop-a-da.
Going back to Evolution Toys, then, where are they located, Adrian?
Well,
you want to go knock on their door.
CMs was actually in Chotoku when they existed.
Which is in Tokyo.
In Tokyo, basically right near Akihabara. I looked up CMs, where they're at. They're based in Kanagawa.
Like, you just said they were in... You're talking about Evolution Toys.
Evolution Toys. I looked up Evolution Toys.
He meant VF1. 1S.
VF1A. So yeah, I looked up their information. And they're based in Kanagawa, like Tama Plaza Kanagawa, way off the Denitoshi line.
Way off the beaten track.
I go there every Monday, so you know I can be your inside scoop if you want.
Okay.
Then again, we were talking about the PF2SS, so I don't know what to ask.
Yeah. Okay. Let's put it this way: they're way over there near Tama Plaza, where you're going to need a bus to get where they live.
Yeah.
So then I went and put their
so working out the garage. Literally garage exactly. Kids.
And I put their address in Google Maps and looked at the street view. And, you know, I found the little...
Rice paddies.
a little bit close. But I zoomed in on their mailbox and I saw, well, there's the Evolution Toy logo.
You can see that on street
You can see
view.
The logo from the street view.
Wow.
And you zoom back out, and it's just a very, very rich-looking house.
Oh, there you go. They are literally working out of their house.
So, well, that might just be the registered
business office. Address, right?
You know, they may actually have an office in Tokyo or whatever.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
That's kind of amazing about Google Maps. It's like when I looked up the Robota, there's actually a shot from inside the bar.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
From
they
2010,
do that.
So it's before they put the tables in. It's just a wall of figures.
Oh, okay.
So
they did often.
I mean, I was happier, you know, than a pig in shit.
Yeah.
All day, just you know, happy looking at it, looking at the pictures off and on. And yeah, I can agree. The fighter mode isn't perfect. And
give me the details here. What is it that, as someone who knows this design like the back of their hand? In fact, I'm surprised you don't have a tattoo somewhere. What is it about the design that you think is kind of off?
Well, it's hard to say because we don't know what stage these photos are in.
Okay.
We don't know if these were, we got the licensing and we were kind of working on this and they approved it, so now we're going to work more on it. It's what you want to believe.
Okay.
But the way things are, the information that is out there, because it's due in autumn.
Yeah, that's very soon.
Yeah, that is way too soon. And if these are the photos, or if... this is the photos represent what we're going to get, they're in trouble.
Right.
Unless you're a diehard fan.
Okay, so we should take photographs of this because it's not going to, you know, I'm not going to be able to explain. But I've got B Club issue 73 right now, and I'm looking at page 7, I want it to look like this. But instead, let's turn over to page 11. It's probably going to look like this. So, yeah, that's what I'm seeing anyway in those photographs. Well,
I think we need to also, Adrian, point out that this toy, while it caught everyone by surprise, from what you've heard, is not necessarily that new of an announcement.
Yeah. All right, well, let me back it up.
Okay.
Let me just back up just for a little bit.
Back it up.
Obviously, after I spewed all over the place, cleaned myself up, and I talked to the rep. And I was like, this is this is a toy that transforms. He's like, yes, it's a transformation system, and we'll have die-cast elements. Evolution Toy, all their mecha has a lot of die-cast. Their toys are really heavy.
Right.
You know, ball bearings, magnets, and actually metal parts.
Heavy, man.
Yeah. Heavy metal. So, the way I see it, they'll probably concentrate more on, oh, let's put a lot of die-cast in it, and that'll be the selling point. Because it'll be more along like their other toys.
VF2SS, you can now kill a small child with it.
Yeah. So, I don't know if that's the case. That's what I'm guessing. That they'll put more of the die-cast metal, and that's probably why the legs and the landing gear look more like a Bandai kit, because it's probably more die-cast in the legs. Because that's usually where die-cast goes for Transformer Mech.
Right.
So, that might be the case. Don't know. And then later that evening, of course, somebody else acknowledged my excitement and congratulated me that it's being released. I'm not going to say
congratulated you.
Yeah.
Well done.
Someone in the industry.
Someone in the industry and very close to Macross.
It's your support for buying all these magazines and garage kits.
As soon as he saw him, he just walked up and said, congratulations. And I was like, okay. And he said, yeah, I knew about it. I'm like, what? And he says, yeah, it's been going, they've been trying to get this approved for a while now. And according to him, he had said they actually had wanted it to actually come out around the same time as the Blu-ray.
Really? So that must have been, that's probably why they are ready to bring it out in August.
Yeah.
It's already up and running. So why is it just a black and white photograph then?
Well, I don't know. Nobody knows that. And so we don't know what stage these photos are at. So we don't know if they're still working on it or that's actually the final stage. I don't really think it is, especially if it's going to be released in autumn. They're still next probably working stage on it. And those are probably just the proposal shots, you know.
Yeah, probably for internal pitching.
Because I imagine that if they turned it in and they're haggling over, you know, I'm going to guess that Evolution Toys was like, well, marketing strategy would say get it out with the Blu-ray. So here, we want it out. And Big West went, big circle here, big circle here, fix this. And if you can't fix those things, we're not going to improve.
Well, yeah. Keep in mind, this is Big West, not Kawamori we're talking about.
Well, it is that. True. But also, like, Big West, who is it that I heard? Is one of you guys, I think, like, they're very picky about new companies when they make proposals.
Yeah, that was actually had something to do with the whole Arcadia issue.
Yeah. So when Arcadia, you know, Arcadia was ready to put out more stuff, but now that they're competing with Bandai, and they're such a small, they're almost like a startup.
Yeah, they're lower on the totem pole as far as what they can, they're granted.
Even if
somebody doesn't want it. And that's the other thing. Even Arcadia doesn't want to do a VF2SS. Yeah. So a 160 scale VF2SS was on the table for the taking if somebody wanted it, and it was Evolution Toys.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of tells you that they're not being stingy with their licenses. It's just nobody wanted to do it.
Yeah,
absolutely. And there's probably no license issue, scale issue if it was given out.
Yeah, there's people in the forums. Let's talk about what people are saying on the forums.
Yeah,
some of them are saying that maybe this will pave the way for Arcadia and Yamato, Arcadia and Bandai to, you know, come around to their senses. And it looks
wrong.
It looks like Adrian is having a fit.
Wrong.
Right now.
Renato, he was in a good mood.
Anyone that believes
just look down at your chest. You got the Charlie Sands logo there, so it'll make you happier.
Anyone that believes that rhetoric and have said it, because you guys have said it about the Beagle, about this, it doesn't work that way. Get it through your head.
So you got to put your money where your mouth is.
Yes. And I know
people don't like the concept of taking one for the team.
Yeah, I've read that. I don't want to take one for the team. I'm not dropping that much. I'm not doing this. And yeah, that's fine. If you can't afford it, no one's asking you to buy it. I mean, I could probably can't even afford it, and I'll find a way to get it because I want it.
If anyone's looking for a kidney, contact Macro Speaker Podcast.
Exactly. I thought that was just an admittance of he's just going to steal it straight up. That's what I read.
I'll do that too. Arcadia is never going to make one. I mean, this thing would have to sell like hotcakes for Arcadia to go, well, we look kind of stupid. Like, we could have done it. But then at that point, the 160 scale would be done by somebody else.
Yeah. Mm. But you've already told us that no one at the Miyazawa Moke hobby show was even looking.
They didn't care. No one noticed it. I mean, I've known people at other toy companies, and I've joked to them, why don't you guys do VF2SS Sentinel toys? And then they just kind of go, no.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the exact reaction. I've seen
all of them. Like, yeah.
Tengen doesn't even want to draw it. Let alone make a toy.
Oh, God. And so, yeah, for them to come in and do this, it's going to be their flagship toy for this new line, and either sell or it won't sell very well. It'll sell enough, and they're going to release a second transformable toy, mm-hmm. I'm guessing, which will be from some other property.
Right. This is a flagship line, but that's not to say it's a flagship line of Macross 2 products.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the thing is, why would they choose this as their first toy from their new flagship line?
Because if they fail, no one cares?
Yeah. And honestly, it's it's got the Macross branding. It's the only thing available within their budget.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So...
So yeah, what else has been said online, like feedback? What are people critical of?
Just the proportions. There's two tabs at the... Do you have a picture of the...
They're on the...
Well, whatever. You know what I'm talking about, right? There's two tabs that stick up on chest. Top of the things that stick up on the chest.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
On the chest, there's two things, and then there's two tabs on top of those things that make it even worse. Than it already is, by the way. It's not a very good design, in my opinion.
I think the Batroid mode, I'm fine with, except for those two pegs. Yeah. And the shoulder, the arm things that kind of protrude out.
Yeah, yeah. But if you look here, there's an extra protrusion on top of those two things.
But keep in mind, this is one thing. The other thing was, if you could actually see the photos really close up, you can see the clear tape holding most of it together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's not... Mm. There's no screws on that thing. It's held together with like tape and stuff.
All right. No, but people are saying, are those tabs, are they going to be able to,
go down
into the thing?
Rotate down. Yeah, yeah. And who knows? Like, yeah. You know, won't know until I actually get this prototype in my hands, which I hope to do soon, some way by talking to somebody. People are commenting like that. Mm. A lot of people, like Jason C, are saying it's like a scaled up version of Bandai's toy. I mean, the Bandai model kit. Mm. And yeah, I do see that. And I think they did base it more off that opposed to the line art, because that's the only thing a company can do and run out and get and have a physical thing in front of them. Unless they go on auction and search for this kind of resin kit. You know, which kit was it? It's the
172
scale.
Valkyrie 2.
From,
Teki Mikatsuki.
Who made this?
Musashiya.
Musashiya's kit. I mean, it took me a long time to get this kit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure they're not going out trying to find it like I did.
Mm.
And this kit looks more like what Renato would want.
Yeah.
But,
except with the junk.
But with the junk.
Speaking of the
damn
junk.
Damn it, Leonardo, you have to come back here and have a word with Musashiya. This was 12,500 yen.
Speaking of junk, I presume you didn't ask them if it was going to come with junk?
The reason I didn't ask, because the guy there was actually their sales guy.
Okay.
So I was pretty sure he wasn't going to be able to answer any questions of, the sap and this and that. And when I explained to him, like, oh yeah, there's a lot of people overseas that would be interested in it. It's not so famous here. And his first thing was, Robotech. It's just like, no. There's a website. My God. It has nothing to do with that.
Now, I've had that happen on multiple occasions. Because people just presume it's... Macross, like on the Japanese side of things, because Robotech never aired here and no one knows what it is. They think, that was just the name change for Macross, right? And if you ever try to explain it to them, they either look at you like you're crazy or their eyes glaze over one or the other.
Yeah. So those are the things people are complaining. My personal thing is about the Valk itself, and what I'd like to see them do is obviously a lot less diecast. Diecast where they only need it, which would be like the joints, just like how Arcadia does it, where it's more like just to support the toy up and not be weighted feet. Personally, they need to get rid of the landing gear because unless I'm wrong,
okay,
the VF2S is a space fighter. It does not land on the ground, ever. If you go deep, 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 deep into the background of the VF2SS, it was originally not called the VF2SS. It was originally the VFXS. And if you go back to B Club, issue 72, November 1991, their announcement for December's issue is, it's new! New Macross... Read that.
Yeah, it does say it's new super in English.
Super aircraft.
Yeah, it's new. New Macross and super aircraft.
What and issue is that?
This is 72. Quiet, Renata. November 1991. The announcement for the following issue, which would be December, they say it's new. New Macross and new super aircraft.
Super.
And, yeah, and it's the line art for... Was it? Kazumi Fujita's VFXS.
Okay.
All right. And that's November 1991. B Club, number 72. Then you get Animage. Again, November 1991. Ishtar on the cover. Inside, they talk about the VFX2, Valkyrie 2. Valkyrie 2.
VFXS, huh? Yeah, okay.
VFXS. And there's line art. And in this line art, it's the only line art that actually shows it with the landing gear. Right?
Okay. We are staring intently here.
Yeah. And it pretty much looks almost identical to the the VF2SS, right? Pretty much. There's a little bit, the head's different. The arms are a little bit different.
The chest, yeah. I don't know, the chest reminds me more of the JA type.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't have the two things that block the head.
Yeah.
I mean, that block the view.
Which, I would have preferred this, actually.
Yeah.
But it's basically the same thing, but there's all these little details that Ohada changed later. Because he seemed to have come up. And this was November 1991. So, this is what you thought you were going to get. The very next month, B Club comes, and then you get the VF2SX. VF2SS.
Okay.
Right? And so it's like within 1 month, they changed it. Like a total overhaul.
And no landing gear to be found.
No landing gear to be found, because at that point, then they start trying to, you know, then you go to issue 79, more on the Batroid, and there's more, they put more of the line art in it. Again, there is no landing gear. But at this point, they start working on the model kit, right? Because they're working on, you know, selling kits. This is the original line art that's also in the This Is Animation book. Same line art. The only new line art is the landing gear. But that's the Bandai Toy line art. That's not line art that matches up with the actual original line art. That's the same landing gear on the toy. The same hatch, the same way.
Yeah, if you look at it, it looks like a toy.
Yeah.
This thing here.
Because this is all to sell the kit.
You know?
And then you get these monthly magazines. Bandai Marketing Journals. Monthly Bandai Marketing Journals. Talking about same stuff. Same kind of stuff. Line art. There you go. And originally, that kit was supposed to come fully transformable without the junk.
Without the junk.
So even the original kit was going to have the wings that separate, the upper wings actually had the actual right way of the design where they're supposed to move forward and backwards. So that was originally what the model kit should have been. And it has a landing gear again. So I think the final version, the landing gear doesn't even look like that. It's just straight down.
Right, yeah.
Right.
What final version?
The actual Bandit kit. The kit,
I had the kit, I don't remember.
But it doesn't come down like that.
Like at an angle, right?
Yeah, it just comes straight down.
Okay.
And then you get further and further. Then they announce that it's going to have the set. Like if you see it, it just comes kind of straight down.
Oh, yeah.
Because with the sap, it makes it more top heavy and it goes. It kind of points down. And then, of course, people don't want the sap. Oh, there's a VF2JA on the back.
But they never made this one.
Oh, well, that's just a static kit. That's a resin kit. They did make that kit.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then later they announced that, if you want the Sylvie Gina version or the standard version, you can get the resin kit option parts.
Which is something I'd be surprised if we couldn't find that at Wonderfest at some point. If this thing comes out without the sap, someone at Wonderfest will put something together
for probably.
Because if they're making stuff to customize toys for Macross the Ride, then surely someone will come up with a sap for this toy.
So like, if you look at the Musashiya kit, you can see how it's got the landing gear, which is more similar to the line art that was in here for the Bandai Marketing Journal. But if you look at the instructions, where the landing gear is, it's like they, again, because it's not based off of the original line art, they have to put it somewhere where it'll work with the sap. And if you look at the old Valkyrie, like VF1, was it 1J? The line art is further back, where this is like way at the tip of the nose.
The landing gear is further back.
Yeah. Ah, landing gear. Yeah. The landing gear is further back.
This is where we saw the line art in the plane.
Yeah.
But the kit, though, it's pointing straight downwards, you said, because of the heavy backpack, right?
And the big rail.
But then this kit here, well, is this going to stay up then?
I assume so. I've seen people build it. But my point is in the animation, it was never, they never used the landing gear.
Because they've always got the launcher.
It always
right?
came out launcher, and it was only used in space.
Yeah, well,
the Metal Siren launched from the field.
Are you sure we never see it like on the planet on Earth?
No, we see it. We see it in the Zentradi Cruiser in Gerwerk mode. That's it. It's the only time it touched down was in Gerwerk mode.
So we never even see it without the sap, without the junk.
Actually, I'm not sure.
Well, we must. Well,
when you think about it in general, Valkyrie design. Why does any Valkyrie need landing gear?
To land.
But we've got vertical takeoff and landing abilities here. Yeah, I know, but like, in all reality, we could landing gear from any Valkyrie design.
Let me bring it back. So my question, though, is, are you sure that landing gear, official line art for the show, doesn't exist?
I haven't seen it. In all these piles of stuff and all the books that I've gotten, Entertainment Bible, it doesn't show the VF2SS with landing gear. It doesn't even, in the line art, there's no panels for where the landing gear is.
We need to get those.
Out.
Oh, that's true.
Right?
Yeah, but they wouldn't draw those anyway.
Yeah. Well, they don't have them here. Like here,
this would be it. Yeah.
In this, but this.
This is used to sell the toys. Yeah.
The cover
the
of B Club issue 79 we're looking at.
Right, okay. I don't know. I guess you'll have to track down one of those fat photocopied chunky booklets that have every line art piece.
I have that
available.
Too.
Do you?
I think I do.
You've got to flip through it and find out if there is line art or not.
But I don't think there's any mecha stuff in it. There may not be.
Oh, okay.
But my whole point in all this is they should just scrap the flaps for landing gear.
Okay.
And put that engineering into better transformable mechanisms to get a better transformation or change some of the angles on the ship.
So looking at the three modes of it, I mean,
well, but if they do that, then how are you going to display it in fighter mode unless they provide a stand which will make the price go up?
Well, you get your own stand.
Fair enough.
I'm a firm believer that it's
Evolution toy, solve your own problems.
Yeah, so exactly. I'm a firm believer it does not have landing gear.
All right.
That's my whole point. I wish they
would... It does not, as in the design does not.
The design...
But the toy does, and so you're going to have that fixed, right?
Yeah, I'd say scrap the landing gear and put more time and money into other things.
Okay.
Also, we don't know if it... The information is so... the guy told me it has diecast. I could have asked him, was it going to have a sap? He'd probably go, sap.
Right.
So maybe it will have a sap. I doubt it.
At that price, I kind of doubt it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Given that this is an all-new toy and they're doing all the engineering work, quality notwithstanding, from scratch, I think that price is, you know, pretty much to be expected in today's market. But a lot of the criticism I've seen online, of the three modes, you know, a lot of people have issues with Gerwalk. Of the three modes, I mean, is your guys' take on it? Personally, I mean, I like it in Fighter and Batroid. If I could afford two, I'd get two and just have a Batroid and a Fighter in a nice pose and leave it at that. But, I mean... Apart from those tabs in the Batroid, was there any pros and cons to any of the versions that we could see in those admittedly very grainy kind of pictures?
I like the fighter mode. I don't really care for the robot mode, and I don't remember what the girl
the Gerwalk mode like. Just doesn't look so good. I like the fighter mode. I just don't like the tail wings, how the mechanism they have shown, the way it works.
We're talking about the toy.
Yeah, on the toy.
I was talking about the design.
Oh, no, talking about the toy.
Yeah, okay. Well, the toy, even worse.
I would probably display, when I get it, I would display it in fighter mode, or depending on which mode looks the best, but I'm more keen on seeing it in fighter mode without the junk.
Yeah. I mean, it's really...
And then somebody went on the forums, or somebody, I don't know if he was a forum member, but somebody put up a picture where they photoshopped the color, and they photoshopped out the two tabs that are in Batroid mode. And it does make a world of difference when there's cover, it's colored, and it's got a little bit of shading on there.
That's Macross fans for you. No color, we add our own.
Exactly.
They're very colorful people.
So, I don't know. Don't know what to say. We're going to try to get in touch with, hopefully get a contact with somebody at Evolution Toys and get a little bit of feedback from them on what they plan to do with it. Because, you know, they can't market it internationally.
Right. So, yet, obviously, most of their sales is going to come from international fans.
I would say the majority of sales will be people ordering from AmiAmi or HobbyLink Japan.
Right.
You know, so it's, who knows, but... Yeah, if get it. That's all I can say. It's
2015, the year of the VF2SS. Who would have thunk it?
But it sounded like they weren't aware of them not being able to sell it abroad, though. The way that you said, you know, that people overseas will be interested in it, and they said, oh, yeah, Robotech.
Well, of course, again, that guy's probably just a sales guy.
Yeah. He just mans the booth.
Yeah. I want to talk to the guy that said, we should do this as the first one, because it definitely is not going to be that guy. Yeah.
So hopefully, in the future, we can get some more insights and see what we can track down about this.
But if it comes out as is, you know, sales probably won't be so good, and it'll probably just be a regular day at Evolution Toys. Because, I mean, their toy quality isn't that high anyways.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I've only got the VIF reviews of dynamic action figures to go by.
Yeah.
I haven't even seen any other reviews of the stuff that they made.
Yeah, well, as you were saying before, most people seem not to be aware of them or what they've done.
And because of that, people are expecting it to be Arcadia.
Quality.
Bandai minimum.
Bandai minimum?
Yeah. Well, Bandai stuff.
People love Bandai now.
Off and on.
Yeah.
Bandai version 1 minimum.
Yeah, right.
So, I don't know. I don't know what to expect from it. I hope they do a lot more tweaking I hope they have time to do a lot more tweaking before they get to the mold stage. Because if they're already got molds done and it's just a couple of things here and there and they're working on packaging, we're screwed. They're screwed, not we're screwed.
And the takeaway from all this is that if you're going to announce a Macross 2 toy, you do it in the building where they record the Macross Speaker Podcast.
That's true. Now, if you don't buy it, what is there to look forward to is at some point they'll go under, they'll have a big liquidation sale.
500 yen vouchers!
And it will be 500 yen like the Noriko figure, because it'll be the one mecha nobody knows about in Japan.
Yeah, we shouldn't say that. People will hold us to that.
Yeah, probably take that part out.
All right, well, now that this speaker podcast has been hijacked, well and good, we're going to call it there for this episode. And all those interesting things, albeit less interesting than the VF2SS that I mentioned in the intro, we'll bring up in the next cast. But this is Macro Speaker Podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, again, speakerpod@gmail.com. Alternatively, get in touch with us on the Macross World forums or on any of multiple Facebook groups. So, this has been another episode of Macross Speaker Podcast. We're all very excited. We hope all the listeners are too. Hopefully, we'll get a good toy out of this. And for this episode, we're folding out. Shimete